Rio Grande Oil Company.
Police calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 119, regarding a series of thefts in the guest room at the Spiny Texas Ranch.
Tonight's true crime story comes from Arizona, and at the same time comes confirmation of a new contract placed by the largest county in Arizona, Maricopa County, specifying that for another year, all sheriff's cars, all emergency cars operated by the county, are to be powered exclusively with Rio Grande Crack gasoline. This is a striking endorsement of the superiority of Rio Grande. In other cities, such as Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, they also specify Rio Grande Crack for all police cars because it operates so efficiently in city traffic conditions. It gives quicker stopping, faster acceleration, and creates greater power and speed than any other gasoline these cities can buy. But road conditions are entirely different in Maricopa County, Arizona, where sheriff's cars speed over an area of 9,000 square miles in pursuit of criminals and on official business, traveling mountainous roads, over scorching deserts where temperatures often reach 130 degrees. Under these trying conditions, Rio Grande Crack gasoline shows its superiority. The patented, exclusive Rio Grande cracking process creates a gasoline with definite advantages over other brands. A gasoline which is more economical and more efficient than any other. A statement which is proved by the fact that more police and emergency cars specify Rio Grande Crack gasoline than any other brand. And now it is our great pleasure to present former Captain M. Joe Mercer, now Detective Sergeant in charge of the Bronco Squad of the Phoenix, Arizona Police Department, and hero of tonight's broadcast. Sergeant Mercer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. C.M. Johnson, my superior, is prevented by his official duties from appearing on tonight's broadcast. So he has requested me to pinch up for him. It places me in a rather peculiar position, inasmuch as the story you're about to hear is one that I solved myself. There is nothing bloody or exciting about this case. No guns are fired and no lives are threatened. But then, a police officer's life is not all violent. Sometimes he is encountering cases which are downright amusing. And of all the cases on which I have worked during my 28 years as an officer, this story of the missing $100 nightgown, is amusing to me. I hope you will find it just as funny.
One day, early in the spring of 1913, Chief of Police A.J. Moore of Phoenix calls the ace detective, Joe Mercer, into his office.
Sit down, Joe.
Thanks. What's up, Chief?
Well, I got a job for you, Joe. We're just up at the Spiny Texas Ranch in Yuba County, aren't we? I'm losing a lot of stuff from their room. I want you to go up there and get your seat. You'll be registered as a guest.
As a guest? Ah, thank you. I couldn't mix with all those millionaires up there.
Oh, sure you could.
No, I'm a copper, not a jew.
Well, you'll get along all right.
Oh, I don't see how.
Well, you're going just the same. I'll get at home and get your bags packed and come back here in a couple of hours. I'll have your ticket ready for you.
What?
Oh, by the way, I forgot something important. Going to pay you for this.
Oh, well, that's good to know. How much?
$10 a day and all expenses.
Oh, and I still draw my regular pay here while I'm gone?
Sure.
Say, I'd impersonate the Tsar of Russia for $10 a day. I'll see you later, Chief.
A few minutes before train time, Detective Mercy reappears at the chief's office.
Hiya, Chief. Hiya.
Ooh, hello, Joe. I was afraid you'd miss your plane.
Oh, no. I won't miss my plane. Not very long. I'll be there, all right.
Well, here's your ticket. Hey, what's the matter with you? What? You look like you've been drinking.
I have.
What?
Part of my disguise.
Are you crazy?
No. Listen, Steve, I got it all worked out. Now listen carefully. I am Thomas Whitney, Jr. You hear? I'm the drunken celebrity millionaire. I'm going to finally catch you, take the bath, and try to get over the habit. That is, get over both habits.
Both habits?
Sure. I take dope, too.
Oh, you take dope, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm a bad one, see. I'm such a junkie in it. Oh, yeah, then I could get by with anything I want to pull.
Yeah, it sounds risky to me.
Ah, there's nothing risky about it. Now, you just wire the Spidey Texas Ratchet. Hello to be Sister Whitley, the drunker young millionaire, the trader, and I'll take care of the rest.
A few hours later, Joe Murphy charges into the midst of the exclusive diners at Spiny Cactus Ranch. He's hustled off the bed by the weary attendant. Next day, Murphy, still nursing a hangover, is visited by Mr. Benton, the manager of the ranch, and Dr. James, the house physician.
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Murphy, why, I'll Towers Whitley, Jr., Sonny Towers Whitley, Alicia, let's hope it's Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, I know all about that, Mr. Murphy. I am Benton, the manager here.
Oh, you're the manager. Hi, boss.
What would you say, Doctor?
I don't have to make an examination to diagnose the case as alcoholic intoxication.
Pack your things, Mr. Murphy. There's a train leaving for Phoenix in an hour.
What?
You are fired.
How fired?
I requested Chief Moore to send me a detective, and he sent me a drunk.
Listen, Mr. Better, have you ever made an arrest?
No, of course not.
Have you ever solved a murder case?
No.
Well, have you ever seen the inside of a jail?
No, of course not. What are you insinuating?
Just this, that it'd be a good thing for you to mind your business and I'll mind mine. I've never managed a hotel, I don't intend to. I don't know the first thing about ice water and room services, vegetables and seasons, but I do know the policing business. Now, you just stick to your job and I'll stick to mine.
You're impertinent as well as unreliable, Mr. Murphy.
Anything I've done has been for a purpose.
What's like using a half page to sign your name on the register last night?
That's lucky I didn't use a whole page. I was drunk.
Oh, you admit it.
Of course I admit it.
The guests are objecting. They all saw you.
Well, that's what I intended they should do. Now, leave me alone like you get the words out of this case.
You'll do no work on this case. You're going back to Phoenix. I'll pay you for your time, and you can get the next train. But don't think you've held the last of
it. Shut up and listen to me, Mr. Benton. You're making me mad. Now, you hired me to come up here and $10 a day of expenses. Well, that isn't enough. My services will cost you $20 a day of expenses.
You're drunker than I thought you
were. Yeah, I'm getting soberer every minute. You haven't heard the rest of this deal yet. I don't like that room you've given me, Mr. Benton. You're going to move me into the best suite on the ranch. The sort of a suite that Mr. Thomas Whitley, Esquire, the son of the Cincinnati soap millionaire, naturally has.
This is quick.
I'm not finished yet, Mr. Benton. You'll keep me in this luxurious style for 10 days. During that time, I will not touch a single drop of liquor. And if at the end of the 10 days I haven't captured your thief, then I'll go back to Phoenix and you don't owe me a cent. How about it? $200 is cheap price for the reputation of your two friends.
That's enough on it, Benton. I can't leave on a proposition like that. Who's your wife, Doctor?
Very well, Mr. Murphy. Your arm.
Yeah, you're a sensible man, Mr. Benton. Now, let's get out of business. Now, that's the whole story, Sylvia. All I know is that somebody's been stealing things from the guest rooms. Now, what has been stolen? Where did it occur? Come on, let's have it open.
The search began about 2 weeks ago. Mr. Potter was the first to report anything missing.
Well, what did he lost?
A half dozen pair of silk stockings and an expensive kimono.
Oh, Mr. Potter wears silk stockings and kimonos, eh?
Not Mr. Potter. Mrs. Potter wears them.
Oh, I see. Well, that's small stuff. I thought you'd really miss something.
We are missing just $30,000 worth of valuables, of which Mr. Potter lost at least $5,000. We'll be sued by the guests unless we reclaim them.
Oh, that sounds more like it. You say Mr. Potter is the heaviest loser, can you put me into a suite next to him?
Why, the bridal suite is next to Mr. Potter.
I'll take it.
Shut up.
I'm giving orders. You have my luggage moved to the bridal suite and tell Mr. Potter to get up there right away. I want to talk to him.
Yes, of course.
Well, how do you like these accommodations?
think we'll change sentences in such furniture. Now, all I need is the bride.
That isn't in your contract.
Oh, that's too bad.
Come in. Oh, Mr. Potter, come in, please.
Hello, Mr. Murphy.
I want you to meet Mr. Murphy. Mr. Murphy is a detective.
How do you do?
Mr. Potter, glad to know you.
Mr. Murphy is up here to try to solve our robbery mystery.
Oh, well.
I hope I can count on your assistance, Mr. Potter.
Oh, yes, indeed. What can I do for
her? Well, in the first place, you wouldn't mind if I had the door unlocked between our suites, would you?
Well, no, would you consider it necessary?
Yes, I do. Have you a pass key, Mr. Benton?
Yes, right here.
Well, you might unlock that door between the suites there, Court Street. Now, Mr. Potter, what have you lost from your room?
Well,
I heard about the silk stockings and the kimono. What else?
Oh, my wife has lost a half dozen $100 nightgowns.
$100 nightgown? You mean each nightgown costs $100?
Well,
they pass.
Well, go on, Mr.
Smith. It's a door open. Oh, that's fine. Now, see, if I was sitting in this room facing the mirror over the fireplace like that, the inspector would pick up the door between the streets, yes. Mr. Benton, will you place that door slightly ajar? Fine. I can see through the door to the mirror on the dressing table in the bedroom, and it reflects the entire living room.
How clever, Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
So simple. Why didn't I think of it myself?
Because you are a detective. Now, Mr. Potter, you just go and enjoy yourself and forget all about me. Except you should be sure that the door between our suites is open.
Oh, you can count on me.
Thank you very much, sir. It's very nice. Now, Mr. Buzzum.
Yes?
At what time have these thefts occurred? At night or during the day or when?
As nearly as I can figure out, they've all occurred during the day when the majority of the guests are out riding or playing golf or at the bar.
I see. I suppose your guests are sufficiently snobby not to try to scrape up an acquaintance with me, huh?
Well, you could hardly expect after your condition on your arrival last night.
Yes, fine. I don't want to make any friends. You're going to hear some funny things about me, Mr. Benson, but don't let them bother you. I'll send for you when I got anything to report, huh?
Detective Mercer, face heavily powdered in simulation of a hopeless drug addict, mingles among the guests at the ranch, surreptitiously sniffs at imaginary narcotics, makes himself a nuisance to the exclusive habitués of the resort. 2 days later, he calls for Mr. Benson.
Well, what have you to report?
Nothing, Murphy. Nothing at all. But I have some questions to ask you.
Yes, go ahead.
Who's the lady who walks with a cane and never leaves the hotel?
You must be Mrs. Hunter.
Do you know anything about her?
Well, she's been coming here for 15 years. Comes out every winter.
Oh, she's above stealing then, huh?
Well, I should think so. She's got $17 million in American sewer.
I lost a dollar in a Phoenix store once. How about that blonde nurse? She's in and out all day.
You must mean the girl who takes care of the family children.
Oh.
She's beyond reproach.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And then there's that swell looker, young dame with auburn hair, a $1 million figure. Who is she?
That's the Countess Frege.
Oh, Countess, huh? She doesn't go out much either.
The Countess is a perfect lady.
Does she pay bills? How long has she been here?
Couple of weeks.
You know anything about her?
After all, she's a countess.
All right. Only remember, it's my job to suspect everybody.
But it isn't going to do you any good to cast aspersions on some of my most favorite guests.
All right, but that's the roll call of the people who hang around the hotel all day. Now, how about the help?
We've investigated their quarters thoroughly and found nothing.
Who investigated them?
The deputy sheriff, who's on the ground.
Oh, there's his deputy on the ground, eh?
Yes, and a very good one.
Well, why didn't you get him to solve your little mystery?
Well, naturally, he's known. We wanted somebody to work undercover.
And when you get your undercover man, you don't like the way he does his job.
It isn't that, Mr. Murphy. Only I do not believe any of the people you've mentioned could possibly be guilty.
All right, we'll see. I have all my meals sent up to me. I'm not going to leave this room until I somebody raiding the Potters next door.
One, 2 days go by while Detective Murphy keeps his self-imposed vigil in his suite. He's sitting all day before his fireplace mirror, commanding a view of the entire interior of the Potter's rooms next door. Then, in the middle of the afternoon of the third day, Murphy's watch is rewarded. He lays down the magazine he's reading as he hears the hall door of the Potter's suite softly open. Watching intently through the mirror, he sees a beautiful young woman clad in an expensive negligee slip into the room, close the door behind her. Quickly, she crosses to the desk, clearly visible to Murphy through his system of mirrors. Like one accustomed to the place, she opens the desk drawer, takes out a wallet, extracts the money it contains, replaces it, crosses to the dressing table, removes a bottle of expensive perfume, takes a half dozen lace handkerchiefs from one of the drawers, and glides out of the suite in unruffled youth. Murphy picks up his magazine, chuckling to himself, but sees as the gorgeous and unimpeachable Countess Thrill. That night, Murphy breaks his custom and dines with the rest of the guests in the ranch dining room. But he sits at the table to one side and eats very little, for his eyes are on the Countess Thrill, gaily chatting with Dr. James, the house physician. Dinner over, the pair wander down the path leading to the moon-drenched desert. Murphy saunters along, just far enough behind them not to be noticed. A slow quarter mile from the ranch house, Murphy senses that he is being followed. Steps off the path behind a giant cactus. Coming down the path behind him is a little man in a huge 10-gallon hat, stealthily peering in all directions as he advances, gun drawn, step by slow step. When his shadow is abreast of the swell, Murphy suddenly steps into the path in front of him.
Hey, what's the big idea? Are you following me?
You better put that six-shooter away. You might get hurt.
What's it all about? Who are you?
I'm the deputy here at the ranch.
Oh, you're the deputy, huh? Yeah, that's right. I heard of you.
What, and you probably have.
Well, what are you following me around for?
Well, to tell the truth, you're under suspicion.
Under suspicion of what?
We've been missing things around the ranch, and the boss told me to keep my eyes open for suspicious persons. And you sure look like a suspicious person to me.
You know, you're wasting your time as a deputy out here. You ought to go to Washington and join the Secret Service.
I'm studying for that.
Oh, you're studying for that. It'd be nice when you get your diploma, won't it?
Yeah, kinda.
Well, what do you do around here when there isn't any deputying to be done?
Oh, I wrangle dudes for the boss in the daytime.
And follow around at night with a drawn gun, eh?
Oh, not all of them. Only you see, you're under suspicion.
Well, listen, Sheriff. As long as you're checking up on suspicious things, take a look down there in the wash and see if that doesn't arouse your suspicion.
Well, let me run for a maverick if it ain't the doctor in the counter.
Yeah.
Looks to me like he's kissing us.
Yeah, that's what they call it where I come from, too.
Say, ain't that a pretty sight?
I can see you only work robbery detail up here. You don't seem to be interested in the duties of the vice squad. Come on, I'll walk back to the ranch house with you.
All right. I don't think we ought to interrupt the doctor and the countess, do you?
No, I don't think the countess will steal anything tonight.
I think you're left looking.
Detective Murphy, easily enjoying his private little joke, next morning instructs Mr. Potter to place some marked money in his billfold and leave it once more in the desk drawer, and to be sure to drop a remark within the countess' hearing that he had forgotten. Shortly past noon, Murphy once more hears the door of the Potter's suite open, looks up, sees the countess in the mirror. She takes the money plant from the wallet from the desk, helps herself to a dozen pairs of silk stockings and a silver ashtray. As he's about to leave the street, Murphy jumps to his own door, opens it as he's passing.
I heard your party. Did you not?
What?
I thought I heard someone in us.
No, you must have been mistaken.
I was lying down half asleep. I beg your pardon.
Your queen can do no wrong, Lindsay, but I guess that doesn't include the counters.
Hello, ask Mr. Benson and Dr. Davis to come up with you. This is going to be good.
Come in.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. Come in. Sit down.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Benjamin, I'm ready to make my report.
Splendid. You're earlier than I expected.
Well,
what is it?
Your thief is a Countess Soylent.
The Countess Soylent? Impossible.
Oh, why impossible, Doctor?
Well, that is...
Well,
the Countess is a lady. She has money. She wouldn't...
Then there must be some mistake. Oh, no, there's no mistake. The Countess Soylent is a thief.
But we only have your word for it.
Well, that should be sufficient. But a search of her room will quickly prove her innocence or her guilt.
But it would be impossible to demand that.
Well, we can't demand it unless we have a search warrant. And we'd have to go to Prescott for one. But we can ask permission to search her room. How about it, gentlemen? Do I have your cooperation, or are you so hoodwinked by the charming and beautiful Countess that you're going to let her get away with it, huh?
Well, I suppose we'll have to face her with you. Oh, there must be some other way.
I can assure you, Doctor, there isn't. Now, Mr. Benson, get Mr. Potter up here when we visit the Countess so he can identify the stuff he's had stolen. And you'd better get that Jude Wrangling deputy sheriff up here. After all, he has the authority to make the arrest in this county, and I haven't.
Very well. I'll get them right away. Are you coming, Doctor?
In a minute. Isn't there any way we can avoid this, Mr. Murphy? The poor Countess is not very well. I have been treating her.
So I've noticed.
And she really can't stand for the doctor.
Listen, Doctor, you don't have to worry. What I saw out in the desert last night is your business. I've forgotten all about it.
What do you mean?
Well, do I have to go into details? I was out there last night. I was hearing her to see if she was turning over the stuff to a confederate. But, I found out what stuff was being turned over was being turned over to you, and it wasn't stolen, it was given. Well, it's okay. That's none of my business. Now, I realize this puts you in a tough spot. But the dame is as guilty of these robberies as you are innocent. And it's my duty to see that she's put under arrest.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate my position.
Appreciate it? God, it has to be the best laugh I've had since I've been here.
Within a few minutes, a delegation composed of Murphy, Benton, Potter, the doctor, and the deputy sheriff is gathered outside the door of the lovely Countess Brady. Mustering up his courage at last, Mr. Benton knocked timidly.
Is Mr. Benton, Countess?
Just a minute.
You
will have something on.
Did you hear that?
Well, Mr. Benton, I didn't know you had friends with you.
Well, it's
good. I better do the talking, Benton. Countess, I don't think we've been introduced. I'm Detective Murphy of the Phoenix Police Department.
You are an honest to gosh detective.
I don't see how that can interest you.
Well, it should. This deputy sheriff here is to arrest you on a charge of suspicion of grand theft.
This is preposterous. Mr. Benton, Dr. James, I thought the guest at Stanley Texas Ranch would be treated otherwise. Why, I never heard of such a thing. You dare speak to the Countess Freilich with such impertinence. I can assure you, if the Count were here, you would answer to the hot steel of his dueling charge.
Ah, come on, Countess. Lay off the dramatics. Now, here's the situation. If you permit us, we'd like to come in and search your room. If you ain't guilty, then you can sue the ranch for damages.
Don't, Mr. Benton. Don't suggest.
Don't worry, Benton, old dear. I know what I'm talking about. Now, listen, Countess. If you want to be tough about it and refuse us permission to come in, you'll have to go to Prescott and get a search warrant. In the meantime, you'll be under the guard of this deputy, and he won't allow you to leave the room.
Will you, Sherlock?
Not if you say so, Captain. Thanks, Major.
Now, Countess, Prescott, a good 6 or 8 miles, at least 8 hours drive across the mountains. And there's snow up there at this time of the year, and I'm in no hurry, so it'd probably be 2 days before I got back with a warrant. And in the meantime, you're a prisoner. Now, how about it? You want to let us take a look-see now, or do you want to stick around and bite your lovely nails for a couple of days? We're coming in anyway. And if you're innocent, you've got nothing to worry about. And if you're as guilty as I know you are, you'll get it all over with right now.
How do you know anything about my guilt or innocence?
You remember when I opened my door and asked if you'd knocked about a half an hour ago?
Yes. I was on my way back from a sunrise.
You were on your way back from Mr. Potter's, where you'd stolen $58 in marked money, a dozen pair of silk stockings, and a silver ashtray.
All right, boy. I guess you got me. Come on in.
What counter?
Yeah, counter. You'll find everything I took in these trunks. I haven't disposed of the same. Didn't intend to, I guess. Just can't help taking things.
There's a sick name for that, isn't it, Doc?
Yes, kleptomania. But counter, your expenses. Gone, aren't you? Then you aren't a real counter?
Nope. The kind of frolic is just plain Lorraine Frazier, Columbus, Ohio. He learned how to act in the drama club at college.
It wasn't his stuff. It hasn't been reported lately. Look in this drawer here.
$3,000? What? There must be $500 worth of silver there.
Yeah, you ought to count your silver after dinner every night, doesn't it? What's this? A lot of footies, huh? Any of this stuff yours, Mr. Potter?
Let me see. Yes, these are my wife's nightgowns.
Oh, the $100 one?
Yes.
Oh. Don't look like more than $875 to me.
See, by the way, Murphy, I want you to know that I appreciate what you've done for us.
Oh, that's quite all right.
And I want you to have this as more concrete expression of the gratitude of Mrs. Potter and myself.
Hmm?
It isn't much. Just a little silver.
Gee, $100 bill. Well, I don't know, Mr. Potter. After all, I'll get paid for this. I don't know whether Mr. Benton would like it if I accept any money from you. Of course not.
Well, why don't you ask him?
Say, Mr. Benton, is it all right to accept a little reward from Mr. Potter?
Well, certainly, Murphy. You've earned it.
Well, thanks. Thanks to you, Mr. Potter.
How's your measure?
Oh, say, Benton, have you got change for $100 bill?
Oh, yes, I think so. $5.20, is he all right?
Yeah, sure. Anyway, I just feel better with money I know how to spend.
A matter of fact, I never had seen a $100 bill before and just wanted to make sure that if it was counterfeit, I wouldn't be stuck with it. Lorraine Frazier, alias the Countess Fairlock, was a clear case of kleptomania. If she couldn't resist the impulse to steal, the law would have put her in prison for grand larceny as a prison offense. But in view of the fact that we recovered everything, she had stolen, aggregating more than $35,000, and upon recommendation to Mr. Benton and Mr. Potter, the girl was released on probation to her parents and returned to Columbus, Ohio. Shortly thereafter, she married, but 2 years later, during the winter, she died with the flu.
Thank you, Sergeant Murphy. Ladies and gentlemen, we especially ask that every listener to tonight's program call upon the nearest Rio Grande cracked gasoline dealer and ask for a free copy of the Calling All Cars News. The new March issue is double-sized, full of extra movie and crime stories, and it tells all about the true crimes to be broadcast on future radio programs. Of special interest to every boy and girl are the many new free gifts illustrated in the Calling All Cars News. Magic police pictures, a G-gun, a detective microscope, and a complete detective outfit of many items, all given free to users of Rio Grande cracked gasoline. You will also find at every Rio Grande dealer's a stock of Sinclair motor oils in cans. There is something unusual about these oils. They contain no paraffin wax, and all petroleum jelly has been extracted. This means that there is no waste, bulk, or filler as you get in other oils. It is this useless, jelly-like material which stiffens in cold weather and thins out in hot weather or at high speed until your motor gets very little lubrication. It costs you no more to get Sinclair canned oils, only 25 cents a quart for Opaline and 30 cents a quart for Pennsylvania. And you get only pure concentrated oil that's guaranteed to lubricate perfectly at highest or lowest operating temperatures. Sinclair motor oils owe their success, like Rio Grande cracked gasoline, to a policy of greater value at the same price. Cancellation broadcast 119 regarding theft at the Spiny Cactus Ranch. Suspected escape now in custody. That's all. Calling All Cars is written and produced by William N. Wilson. This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.